You're listening to the AHDB podcast, farming news and stories from across the UK.
Grazing dairy cows is nothing new, so you might wonder why there is so much focus on it in the dairy sector. The influence of the New Zealand-style system over recent years can't be denied. However, grass can form a vital part of our system if you are all year round calving or managing a herd of high-yielding cows. I'm Becky Miles, Knowledge Exchange Manager for AHDB Dairy, and today I'm joined by Robert Mallett, dairy farmer from Wiltshire, to talk about his experience of grazing a high-yielding herd and how grass has become a fundamental foundation to his system. Welcome, Robert, and thank you for joining me today. For those listening, can you please tell us a bit about your farm?
Yeah, sure. We farm in North Wiltshire, just south of the River Thames. We've got about 420 acres farmed, of which 217 is grass. We grow just under 100 acres of maize. We've got 107 acres of wheat in the ground this year, which will be for whole crop, and the rest will be harvested. And we treat it as urea-treated crimped maize to feed the cows as well. So it's all for cow feeding rather than sale. Grazing platform is about 88 acres for the cows and another 25 acres of grazing for young stock. And we've cut about 130 acres for first crop last week.
And how many cows have you got in the milking herd?
We milk about 230 cows is about capacity, and we're autumn calving rather than all year round. So we start at the end of August, and we got about 8 due in January, over 100 due in the first 3.5 weeks or so.
And what sort of milk contract are you on?
We're on a fresh waste contract, which is a true white water contract. Mm-hmm. Almost no payment, only 2.5 pence per percent for butterfat, so no incentive to produce butterfat. Yep. And it's an A and B contract, so price is a bit unpredictable in the peak in the spring.
And what sort of yield are you getting from them?
From the cows, we're doing almost 12,000 litres, 11,890 odd litres, and almost 4,000 litres from forage. And we milk three times a day, all cows all year round. Quality is 3.74 butterfat and 3.31 protein. Cell count about 180.
Tell me about the breeding of your cows.
We got a herd of pedigree Holsteins. I've always believed in breeding the best. We use genomics bulls since they've been available since 2011, I think now. And we're frustratingly just outside the top 1%, the PLI. The other trait I really look at is lifespan. I think an extra sort of 180, 200 days life out of the best genomic bulls compared to their dams. That's absolutely massive improvement. I think we forget how much progress has been made in breeding, particularly since the advent of genomics. Hairs are getting better and better at doing their job, and healthier and easier to manage as well, which is great.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So do you use the herd genetic report to help
you? I do, yeah. Every time it comes out, I'm like, I'm going to be in the top 1% now. I think the top 1% is 220 and I'm 218 or something like that.
Oh, it will happen. So what do you get from the herd genetic report? Which aspects of it are the most useful?
Just looking at where we fall short, which is butterfat percentage doesn't bother me, though. Who knows what's going to happen in the future, but we don't get paid for butterfat at the moment. Mm-hmm. The PLI lifespan is what we concentrate on.
Yeah. And what about the team? Who have you got on the farm with you?
We've got three full-time staff. And me, and I do a certain amount of relief milking. And my son sort of slowly coming into the business as well.
Okay, so let's talk about how you use grass in your system. But first, can you tell me why you decided to make grass such a vital part of your system? What were and are the drivers for you making the most of your grassland?
I suppose it's cost, basically, isn't it? We're not on a particularly good milk price, but being three times a day, that sort of suits the contract that we don't get paid for solids, so there's an incentive to produce high volumes of low solid milk is what we get paid for. Grass is just the cheapest source of feeding cows healthily, I suppose.
So can you explain to me how you use grass within your system and how long you've been running your current system?
Yes, we've been grazing high yielding cows for 10 years or so now. It's evolved into more and more reliance on grazing as we got more confident in the system. If you start with, you mentioned the New Zealand type system, it seems to me that they're aim is to grow grass and use cows to harvest it, and if the grass doesn't grow, they don't harvest any grass and they don't get much milk. Whereas my aim is almost the other way around, that I know I will never have enough grass to graze every cow, and I always have high yielding cows that will need some buffer feeding. So I make sure that I utilize all the grass that I grow, and expect to buffer feed the high yielding cows as well, and that gives me a certain amount of flexibility. The New Zealand systems work really well. In Ireland or West Wales or Cornwall or somewhere, we guarantee it's going to rain every week. Yeah. Here, where it's been a very dry May last year, very dry April this year, you can't guarantee the grass supply. So you need a sort of backup system to feed in, get the cows milking when the grass isn't there, but also enough grazing capacity to make use of the grass. Hopefully with an inch of rain in the last week, that's now.
Yeah, we've just had a hailstorm. So I know, I've been to your farm, you're in one of my discussion groups, you graze your heifers very early on, so you train them to graze. At what point in joining the herd do you decide which group they're going to go into and which group's going to graze more, and how do you manage them?
Because we're autumn block calving and only use sex semen, all the replacements are born within 4 weeks, hopefully for the end of August, so they're always treated as a group. We've always grazed young, so that's one of the beauties of having them born early, that they're big enough and old enough to go out and graze in March or April or May, as it's going to be this year. We've always done it, so I don't know the importance of training them to graze as a young age, but that's always been the plan, is they were well enough grown through the winter to graze unsupplemented through the summer until they come in to be served to calve at 2 years old. So they've always been treated as a block, which is a big advantage compared to all year-round calving herds. As I see it, that they've got a group of calves born every month, so they've all got to be treated differently.
How do you divide the milking herd into which ones are going to graze and which ones aren't? What's the limit? Is it a yield selection?
Yeah, because of the way the housing works, we've got three groups in the winter. We've got a group of 60, which are always the low yielders, a group of 130, which we call the high yielders, and another shed which has about 35 in, which are cows that need a bit more attention. An old cows, anybody that's been lame or slow milkers and those sort of things, all on sand bedded cubicles. We've got no straw yards at all. So the aim with the low yielding group would be to get them out, start grazing the end of February, perhaps more realistically the beginning of March, 3rd of March this year, despite it being a particularly wet year. And because they're safely in calf, I can be reasonably aggressive. They'll be averaging sort of 35 litres at turnout, be reasonably aggressive at adding grazing to their diet. And young sort in calf heifers will certainly go out as early as possible as well. As much as anything, a grazing management tool to make sure we hit those residuals early in the season to keep the grazing quality up for the rest of the year. I was, because we're three times a day, split the days, nutrition into three groups. So if the low yields group go out for a third of the day, I cut off a third of their TMR and they have to have it from ground, simple as that. Once you get to the point where they're out two thirds of the day, cut off two thirds of their TMR, and then hopefully reach the point in early in May when they're fully out and just topped up in the parlour. We have got parlour feeders, which is quite a useful tool to have.
So, Robert, tell me about the high yielders. How many hours a day would they be grazing when they are out?
As much as possible. They are high yielders. They've been averaging 42 litres or so before turnout. But the aim is certainly to get them out as early as possible to get a third of their intake from grazing. Intakes at the moment, 26, 27 kilos dry matter. So looking for 8 or 9 kilos from grazing, and same as the low yielders, I just cut off a third of the TMR, so they will go out after morning milking and come back in time for afternoon milking. They'll be out for the whole of that period, unless it's absolutely awful conditions, which I might put them out for 3 hours and bring them back in.
So for some farmers listening to this and they're hearing 42 litres a day and you're turning them out for a third of the day, they're shrugging their shoulders, they're thinking, how do you make this work? So how did you start? What gave you the confidence to push them to graze?
Just seeing other people doing it in the grazing discussion group, seeing other people grazing, not necessarily high yielding cows only, but the production potential from grazing is massive and greatly underutilised, I think, by a lot of dairy farmers.
So what have you learned over the years from grazing your high yielders?
You have to be flexible, you have to think on your feet a bit, but it works. Cows graze, that's what they do.
And what management fundamentals do you work by to make sure grass has a place in your system?
We have over the years invested quite a lot of money in infrastructure, I suppose. So we've got about 38 grazing paddocks of around about a hectare each, 1.1 hectares, 3 acres or thereabouts each. And we've got concrete sleeper tractors, which are really good, some hardcore tracks, and water troughs in each paddock, about halfway up each paddock. The paddocks tend to be about 100 metres wide, so we can split them down with a fence quite easily. That's certainly part of the key to it, is making it easy. Every time any group of cows go out, they always go to fresh grazing. We always move the fence in front of them so they've got fresh grazing, so they've got that incentive to get out there and graze. Even if perhaps we over allocate a bit, then we just give them a little bit, but it's just that psychology of their head that they need a bit of fresh grass to go out.
How do you manage the buffer feeding aspect and ensure it doesn't affect cow appetite when you turn them out to grass?
As I've said, if they're out a third of the day, I cut off a third of their TMR. I used to think that was quite, you know, cows that housed should have feed in front of them all the time. I've now found out that it doesn't really matter. My nutritionist says as long as I get the opportunity to fill up completely once every 24 hours, that's enough. And my experience has been that that is the case. My calculation is, you know, my TMR is about 70 pounds a ton. If I can save a ton of TMR, you know, if I lose on my bee price anyway, that's worth 350 litres of milk. So even if I lose that 350 litres of milk, which I wouldn't expect to, I'm still better off because I haven't got cares, hairs, and I'm not making silage in that grasses. So the high yielders at the moment that were out, they were eating 6 tonnes a day of TMR. So we obviously turned them out reasonably gently over 3 or 4 days. We didn't just cut a third of their TMR from then. Stick them out and expect them to find it, but over a week we cut out a third of their TMR. That means the troughs are probably empty at midnight and they're not bawling hungry, but they've got nothing in front of them. But it does mean they go out with an appetite when they go out straight after milking at up at 5 or so in the morning. That's important. There's no point in filling them up with TMR and then sticking them out in the field and expect them to go easy.
No, that won't work.
No, it doesn't work. So you've got to be slightly bold about just making them that bit hungry, but cows are pretty adaptable. They will. We'll fill up when they've got grub in front of them. Yeah, it helps to learn their eating behaviour. I've got some very nice graphs from cow managers that there. When cows go out to graze, they will graze for about 3 hours and then they'll sit down and chew the cud for 3 or 4 hours. So if you want two grazings in that session, they need to be out for 7 or 8 hours, not bring them in. The best thing you can do is bring them in at 5 or 6 hours when they've had a bellyful, they've sat down and cudded it and they're just ready to eat again. You don't want to bring them in, put them in an empty shed.
I know you measure your grass with a plate meter. How is grass growth looking at the moment? We've had a very cold spring. And how is measuring the grass helping you make decisions going forwards?
Yeah, like anything else, you measure it, you can manage it. Grass growth this week was 55, which is a big improvement on April, but still pretty bloody poor. I hope to get to 100 for May. I've managed it by not turning out the young calves, which normally would be out grazing by now. Perhaps cut a bit less first cut than I normally would have done. I've gone very early with first cut to release some aftermaths for grazing if I need it. Now we've had this rain, hoping perhaps I won't, and we'll be able to cut the same acres again for second cut. I measure every paddock every week. I used to try and delegate that, but I think now I've learned that it's not only measuring it, assessing it and looking at it and the quality as well. There's more to it just than the physical measurement. And because I run a relatively complicated system, I can adapt it so that the high yields can go where the best quality and best availability of grass is. And yeah, cares, I've got 38 paddocks, and I tend to care sort of jump around and like go 7 to 9 and then back to 15 and just jump around all over the place. But that is the whole point, that is what makes the difference. If you poached a paddock, for example, the last time you graze and it doesn't recover, that's the point of measuring it, is that you can skip that one and give it a bit longer to recover and move into one that haven't done so much damage. So it's just about flexibility. Yeah, so morning a week, I spend planting and making up my grazing plan for the rest of the week. Once it's done, I just put it on the board and everybody follows it. So.
Excellent. So which programme are you using to record your plate meter readings?
I use Agronet.
Yeah, and how do you get on with that?
Yeah, really well. I couldn't manage it. It's best €80 a year I spend.
Very good. Okay, so what was the biggest challenge when you started out? Knowing what you know now, would you do anything differently?
Should have started sooner than I did, I suppose. It was a long time when I had in cares housed continuously. It cost me a lot of money, but relatively milk price was a lot better than maybe I could afford. Yeah, just having confidence in the quality of grass and being able to maintain that quality.
I agree. It really is having the confidence to go out there. It's a completely natural product for a cow to eat, and we generally grow an awful lot of it. It's utilising it and putting the right grass in front of the cows at the right time. How has making more use of grass affected your milk production? What's the main key performance indicator you look at in terms of your herd and grazing?
Obviously, margin is what matters, I suppose they say. Yield is vanity, profit is sanity. That's dead right. So our yields have been fed. We've been over 10,000 litres for probably 15 years or so. So yields haven't gone up, perhaps in comparison with the genetic ability of our cows. Milk prices come down relatively, but we haven't maintained those margins. So it's margin that matters, and overall herd margin as well. There's a lot of focus on margin per litre, but margin per litre times the number of litres you sell is what matters.
So I remember the first time I met you, I came to collect some data on cost of production, and I was blown away that you were one of the very few farmers that, if I asked you a question, you had the answer straight away. It was so impressive, and it stood you in really good stead. I know you're measuring your grass. Are there any financial or physical key performance indicators that you look at on a weekly basis?
Feed rate per litre is the main one. Purchase feed per litre is the one that I look at hard. I'd like to keep it below 0.3. We got 0.29 a year ago. 2020 has been a difficult year in many ways. And we crept up to 0.32, but it could have been worse than that.
Okay, so there really is value in having data. And I know, yes, some people don't embrace data and they don't find it easy, but there are some just basic numbers. If you can just check them on a weekly basis, and then you can make changes, management changes, to keep yourself on track. So just encourage everyone to take one leaf out of Robert's book to help them going forwards with their business. Have there been any knock-on benefits from giving grass a bigger role within your system?
That's the obvious one, less cares, pows, less slurry to spread, that sort of thing. People often ask me about, you know, milking cows three times a day, but they're out in the dark and we get them in the dark, but it's not a problem that they're always in a, you know, the paddocks are never more than 3 acres, so it's not like wandering around a 20-acre field with a torch trying to find the damn things. They're well used to coming in. All of us would much rather, even get the odd wet day, you'd much rather go and get a group of cows in out of the field with a torch than scrape a shed out. On a beautiful spring day, what could be better than the water in the field?
Exactly, it's the best time of day. I'm a morning person myself. So what would your top tips be for any farmers out there who are maybe set stocking at the moment and wanting to get more from grass this grazing season?
Just have confidence in grass. The thing that's perhaps made me emphasise the grazing so much is if you look at the alternative, obviously anybody can grow grass if it rains. You've got two choices, you can put it in a clamp, chop it up and feed it to the cows, and that's okay, that gives you a certain amount of control. Or you can let cows graze it. If you put it in a clamp, you've lost probably pretty much 50% of the protein that's in it, and protein is the expensive part of your ration, absolutely. If you analyse fresh grass, it's 22, 25, 28 maybe protein. Quite difficult to make silage that's more than 12 or 13% protein. So you've lost half that protein in the fermentation process, and you've lost a certain amount of dry matter as well. Energy is not so bad, but you've probably lost 25% of your energy as well. You've got that cost of putting in a clamp, you've got the cost of building the silo and all that. So why not just let the cows out there go out and graze it? And the answer is, it's not that easy. I mean, anybody can graze cows in April, it's easy. Come the end of May, grass gets this what I call stroppy teenager stage. It wants to put a reproductive head up, and that you've got to control. So that is just a case of learning how to control and how to graze quite aggressively, I suppose, to make sure that you keep those stroppy teenager grass plants down to ground level, keep producing leaves. You quite often see beefers in particular wandering around the field with a load of seed heads stuck up, and you think, they might be grazing, but it's not a quality that they're grazing. Feeding cows, there's only two things you've got to worry about, quality and quantity. And with grass that are a bit counterproductive, perhaps you can have a lot of quantity and no quality, but what you need is quality and quantity. You can learn how to do that by just grazing grass effectively, I suppose. Type of grass you grow is also important. We've tried grazing Italian and hybrid type lays, and they are very, very difficult to manage, particularly later in the season, because they just want to put a seed head up. They're much more intended to be cut and much better utilised as cutting lays. So, you know, you can graze them, but long-term late perennial ryegrass lays are much more amenable to being grazed, shall we say.
Yeah, so it's all about planning what you're going to need when through the year and sowing accordingly, isn't it?
Yep.
Okay, just a question, I'm not sure if you know the answer. Have you worked out the return on investment? So you have put down tracks and troughs and fencing. Have you ever worked out what the return on that investment has been?
We did have a go at it a few years ago. It's quite difficult to get a handle on it, really. How long do lays last? How long do you cost sleepers over? One argument, concrete sleepers, you can always pick them up and sell them, but you probably could now, actually, they're quite in demand, but like a lot of things, they're never worth what you paid for them. So it's quite difficult. The conclusion we came to, I was talking to somebody, a bigger farmer who was split up by main roads and whatnot, and he was trying to do a comparison against investing in tracks and sleepers and water troughs and stuff against like a zero grazing system and a forage wagon hauling grass to the cows, and that, you know, grazing, you're lucky like me that you haven't got a main road through the middle of your farm or something. Grazing I reckon was around about half the cost of appreciation and maintenance cost on a forage wagon. So it's difficult to be precise, I think.
Yeah, exactly. So what's the future for North Lees Farm, Robert?
I knew you were going to ask me that one. I haven't thought of an answer to that. More of the same.
I thought it was David.
Yes, you're right. What we've done in the last 18 months or so, because we've been shut up with TB, we've fed up with selling Belgian blue beef calves for a discounted value. So we put up a new shed, put £100,000 on a shed to fatten them in. As it happens, we picked a really good year for that. The beef prices have rocketed up in the last 12 months. I think we've made about £300 of animal margin over selling them as calves. By fattening them, that's not a grazing-based system. Then, because of the way the housing works, they've got to be gone by 14 months to empty the shed for the next lot of calves that are coming in. So it's been an intensive fattening system based on low silage and concentrated urea-treated wheat. That's worked really well. I don't have any ambitions to expand the number of cows when I milk on a Sunday morning. I think 230 cows is probably enough.
Funny that. Robert, thank you so much for your time today. It's been fascinating to learn more about your system and your experience. We wish you all the best to you, your family, and especially David for the future. For our listeners, for all things grazing, please visit our Forage First pages on the AHDB website, where you can access tools and resources to help you make the most out of grass to fit your system. During the grazing season, we have a special email information sheet called Forage for Knowledge, and we have farmers all around the country, so there'll be one near you, who are measuring their grass, and we analyse it and put all the results up on this page for you to help you manage your system in your area. So if you're interested in that, that's also on the website. I'm Becky Miles. Thank you for listening.
The AHDB podcast. Subscribe now so you don't miss future episodes.